there, and welcome to another episode of the London Theatre Podcast, coming to you from our bedrooms yet again, and through Spotify, and now over YouTube. So if you're listening to this, you can actually find us on YouTube now, the London Theatre Podcast, and you can see our faces as we chat about theatre and the arts and our lives in the last few months. It's been, well, for everybody, a bit up and down, but it's, as we were just saying before we started recording, this feels very nostalgic. We're actually going to be talking about theatre that you can buy tickets for and go and see. We're going to be talking about something that's actually happening rather than theoretical kind of when the hell is theatre coming back. Newsflash in, it's coming back. It's coming back right now. We have producer Rebecca Harvey and we have director Elif Knight. Welcome both of you to the London Theatre Podcast. How are you both doing today?
Good, thank you.
Good.
Very good, Tom. Thanks for having us.
It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure to have you now that the weather has cooled down. My fan arrived today from Amazon, and it arrived 4 days too late. It's been quite a... But yes, it's nice to be chatting to you on cooler conditions. Just get the weather talk out of the way first, obviously, the small talk. Before we jump into it, let's just check in with you both. Because we just had news today from the government that, you know, that theatre is coming back, that indoor theatre performances can start to go ahead, although we're still waiting on more guidelines. But outdoor theatre, which is the reason we're talking today, has been back for a while. And I believe this production, Polite Conversation, began in an indoor capacity at the Canal Cafe Theatre, right? And you've adapted it now to go open air, is that right?
Lauderdale House, yeah, that's correct.
Yeah, so Rebecca, let's start with you as producer. When and how and the why and the if and the what's and stuff, how did this come about, converting Polite Conversation to an outdoor space?
Okay, you broke up quite a bit there, but I think...
Did I?
So,
oh, no.
You did, it might just be me.
I heard every word that I said, so I don't know what's going on. So to paraphrase, so Polite Conversation, going from an indoor space to an outdoor space, just give us a little bit about that.
So, I mean, the indoor performance was something Elif had directed before, and we were looking for a particular play that would work well. We'd found the venue, like what would work well in this space, and their only specifications to us was just not another Shakespeare. So we'd trolled all these different existing plays, like, you know what, there's too many characters, or it's too long for people to be sitting outside on the lawn, and then Elif was like, well, what about Polite Conversation? At the time it was a 20-minute piece when it was done before, but we were still in contact with the writer. So Elif spoke to Andrew, just like, how would you feel about adapting this into an hour-long piece? Because I read it was perfect. I spluttered out my coffee because I thought it was so funny. I was like, we have to adapt this into a longer piece. I think this would be great. And I think at this time as well, people really need to laugh. They need something funny and uplifting. So a comedy just felt right. And it was originally a dinner party inside. So we were like, well, why not just change it slightly and make it a socially distanced barbecue and just make it work with an outdoor space? So Andrew did his magic, tweaked things a bit. And I think it'll be really nice, one, because it'll make people laugh, but they will also hopefully be able to see themselves and laugh at the situation because we've made it kind of appropriate to the context as well as the venue, if that answers your question.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, so it was originally like an immersive dinner experience, or you would, and then...
That was just the setting. It was just a straight play, but the setting was a dinner party. That was the context of the play.
I see.
And we were like, well, that doesn't really work if we're going to perform outside. It takes quite a lot of imagination to imagine that we're inside. So let's just make it, the characters are outside. They're having a barbecue. And then that works perfectly with the beautiful setting of Lauderdale House, because we'll be performing in front of the house. And it feels like the audience are in the extended garden. So I think that works quite well, really.
Amazing. And it's quite a location change, because as lovely as the Canal Cafe is, this house is quite beautiful and amazing. So Elif, did that kind of change the setting at all when you were restaging it in terms of, like, with the location? How did you go about sort of changing all of it around?
So basically, we did it in the Canal Cafe Theatre, and then we also did it at the Union Theatre in Southwark.
Oh, right.
Yeah, I went from a very small space to then the Union Theatre, which was a much larger space. And myself and Rebecca worked on the Crystal Egg in three huge spaces in the vaults. So for me, honestly, it wasn't a massive challenge to be going from, you know, a small space to a big space, because I feel that I've done that before. And so the biggest challenge was finding the right piece. Mm-hmm. And I spent a whole week just reading lots of plays and looking at Oscar Wilde and thinking about the sort of characters I wanted to bring out to life outside. And that was the most important thing, because I do think people need to laugh rather than feel more depressed. So I then, you know, approached Andrew and I said, can you just adapt this into a dinner party outside? It can be a barbecue, it can be, you know, a picnic, it doesn't really matter. And I just trusted that he would be able to do that and then just put it on outside. So then I approached my designer, who I've worked with for the Crystal Egg as well, Jason Kelvin. And I just said, look, Jace, you know, this is what we're gonna do. It's at Lauderdale House, have a read, let me know your thoughts and we'll take it from there. And he's done some nice set design for it. So I'm sort of working with the space and with my designer rather than, you know, having my stamp on it. So yeah, in that way, it's a nice collaboration. And I think it works perfectly for outside. The only thing I've got to do now is get the actors to project, and that's about it. My job is done.
It is quite, I suppose, yeah, the challenges of open air theatre. As well, I mean, Rebecca, you mentioned originally this piece was 20 minutes long.
Yeah, and now it's an hour, so it's been extended.
Right, and so was it 20 minutes as well when it's at the Union as before?
Yes, I mean, it was about 15 to 25 minutes, and I actually, you know, we had, it was such a successful run at the Union Theatre and the Canal Cafe. And afterwards, I was joking around with Andrew, the writer, and I said, look, one day we really have to turn this in to an extended performance. And then right in the middle of a pandemic, I call him up. I'm like, Andrew, do you remember that time when we said we should extend this play? How about now? And he was like, what are you talking about? And I said, look, we've got this great space and I'd like you to extend it if you want to. And Andrew was like, ah. Oh, I haven't been writing for ages. Great, this has given me something to do. And he was like just about to board a plane to like Mallorca or somewhere. So he was like, fantastic, I'm going to sit by the pool and write this. And within a few days, we had the extension. Mm-hmm. So it's about 40 minutes to an hour long, yeah.
That is quite an extension, especially when you're chilling by the pool, and that's discipline as a writer,
well,
and, you know.
We already had the ideas before to extend it because we could see these characters in a full-length play. So this was a perfect opportunity, really.
Mm. And has there been any other additions in terms of cast, or is it the same number of cast? Are the cast coming back?
It's the same number of casts. I wanted to bring back the original cast, but one of my cast members is out filming in New Zealand. Some other people are away on holiday. So, and then I thought, you know what, it'd be really nice to get new actors and, yeah, just sort of freshen it up a bit with the extended version. So I'm approaching it like it's a whole new play.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Awesome. And, of course, this isn't the first time you've both worked together. I should have actually at the start, Where Are My Manners, welcomed you back to the podcast, because you've both, until I did my research, passed me by, because it was 2.5 years ago, but you both worked on the Crystal Egg experience, which was at the Vaults, and actually got to see that as well. It was fantastic. And just give us a, I mean, that was a very different experience to what you've got going on now, but just give me a little bit of background into how you two first met and how and working together. Like, how did this creative partnership first begin?
Good question, and I like this. I want Rebecca to answer this.
It's a fun story. So basically, a very long time ago, I'd written my first ever play, and I was performing it, trying to get it off the ground, producing it at The Space in Isle of Dogs. And I was putting call outs, auditioning for casts, and we were in a room in the Young Vic Theatre, I think. Elif walks in, originally auditioning as an actor. And I told her about it. She wasn't right for the role, and she went, "But listen here, I'm really interested in this piece and I want to help. Do you know, I actually direct as well." And she saw me the most perfect pitch. And I was like, "Do you know what? I want to give you a go. Let's like work with each other for a bit." Anyway, she ended up directing this piece for me, transforming it. There started the creative partnership. And then when I was brought on as producer for The Crystal Egg, I was like, "I know a perfect director for this piece." And I brought in Elif Knight. So there we go. That's how that started.
Wow. I thought, Elif, maybe like when you started directing that first piece, you might have gone, "You know, these actors aren't really working for me. I know an actor who could do this, me." And you sort of like wormed your way back in. No. Okay. Oh, wow. That's brilliant. I mean, that, what a great story. Like, just, I mean, that's just proof of why you can't just be one or the other. It's just, you know, to be interchangeable like that and have more strings to your bow. And look at you now, you know, making work in a pandemic. Brilliant.
<Yes. laughs>
We should just talk a little bit about, I think, you know, being creatives in lockdown. I mean, the fact you approached the writer and said, "We've got this idea," and his response was, "Oh my God, I've not written anything in ages." And that kind of restarting the creative fires, as it were, because has it been quite, you know, in terms of lockdown, was it quite stagnant for you both? And then this is the project, and then, or I mean, how's your lockdown's been, I suppose, creatively?
It's been very, for me, I mean, I'll let Elif answer for herself, but it was very interesting. So at the start, it seemed quite stagnant, and it's like, well, what do I do other than tutor? And then I was working on a film for a bit, and then all of a sudden, Elif approaches me with this idea, and I was thinking of the window, and I was like, flip, like, if we were going to put on an outdoor play, we have the fastest turnaround I've ever done before in my life if we're going to produce this. So since she pitched the idea and we decided it was happening, it has been the fastest whirlwind, I think, that I've ever had in lockdown and getting a payoff off the ground. But yeah, before that, it was very odd, and it felt like, you know, balancing your creative thing or trying to keep myself creative, maybe doing a bit of writing here, a bit of tutoring there, dreaming a bit there, you know, updating website here, up until this point where we were decided to take a massive risk in making something and just go for it. But that was, you know, Elif definitely initiated that process.
Awesome.
Yeah, so basically, in lockdown, I was getting close to finishing a comedy piece that I was writing for television. And it only took me 2 weeks during lockdown. But I was also coaching actors online as well. About 12 years ago, I started working with a method acting teacher from the Actors Studio called Jack Walzer. And during lockdown, I suggested to him to give classes to all his students all over the world, London, LA, Paris, New York, acting classes. And that started to happen. So we were doing online classes on Zoom with 50 students every evening for a month. And during that period, he said to me, you know, I might not be teaching physically in London anymore, but I'd like you, you know, when I die, to sort of teach my method in London. So I thought, I'm not going to wait till he dies, because this guy's going to outlive us all. And
request. When I die, carry on my...
Because he's the man now, you know, So we all go to him. And I just thought, well, you know, I'm really bored, so I need to do something. I've just finished writing. And I started giving some acting classes, one-to-one, to children and to amateur actors and to professional actors. So that kept me quite occupied, actually, during lockdown. And then I just thought, you know, this decimation of theatre and film and people just getting really down about it, it really affected me in a big way, but not that it made me depressed. It just sort of made me think, okay, what can I do that involves a group of people, a venue, and where I can do my bit for society, if you like, I really felt that I could give something. And I was, before lockdown, in talks with the Highgate Festival to potentially direct something for their festival this year, which ended up happening online, and I wasn't involved. But I just thought, I'm going to approach some venues in Highgate that, you know, I was potentially going to work for and with. And so I grew up in that area as well. And I just picked up the phone and called the organisers of Lauderdale House. And I said, listen, you know, I was going to do something for you for the festival, but obviously that's not happening now. Mm-hmm. But can I maybe do my bit in the sense that perhaps we can put on an outdoor play? And yeah, we spoke for ages with Catherine, the organizer, and she just said, come and have a meeting with me. And we sat outside and chatted for about 2 or 3 hours about lockdown, about theater, about outdoor performances, about me going to school in Highgate, and all sorts of things, really. And yeah, she just said, all right, you know, give me some time and I'll get back to you with a confirmation. And in that period, I spoke to Rebecca and I said, look, this may or may not happen, but let's get our actors together. Let's get our team together. Let's not have any expectations, but this is looking pretty likely. So let's just expect the unexpected and be prepared. Mm-hmm. So we didn't have an answer, and we actually didn't have an answer for a few weeks for various different reasons. But I think one of the main reasons were, at the time, we were waiting for government to say, yes, you know, you can do outdoor shows. And once that happened, soon after, I got the go ahead from the venue. But between that period, for about 3 weeks, me and Rebecca were like constantly doing work. I was reading plays. I was getting onto Andrew to write the extension. I was getting potential actors on board. I was doing my homework. You know, I was onto the designer, all sorts of things, really. Mm-hmm. And then there were moments where I thought, this might not happen at all, and I'm doing a lot of free work here. So I had to sort of pace myself, because it took up a lot of myself and Rebecca's energy. But I think that's why me and Rebecca work really well together. We're sort of like, okay, this looks like it will happen, but we also understood it may not happen. And we kind of worked within those parameters. And I felt very hopeful. And I just thought, you know, I'm not doing this for me. I'm doing this for society. I'm doing this for Highgate. I'm doing this for the local community. We're doing this for actors. We're doing it for the designer and to collaborate. And I think that sort of good feeling really was really what made it kind of happen, if that makes sense, because everyone was grieving, and I just thought, you know, this might be a way of kind of lifting people's spirits, and yeah, the venue liked that. So yeah,
amazing. And especially when 3 weeks can just feel like 3 months at the moment, you know, I mean, fair play for keeping that momentum going. And the risk paid off, because they said yes. And one question I wanted to ask about this adaption and working around the government guidelines and stuff is, how are you rehearsing all of this new material that's going into this play? How are you getting the actors together and doing this under the social distancing parameters?
I'll let Rebecca answer the first part, because we did have a Zoom meeting where she explained everything sort of COVID related to me. So I'll let you explain that bit, and then I'll get on to the rehearsals.
So the advantage for this is that I was already working as a COVID health and safety supervisor on a film, so it kind of felt
perfect.
This was almost like sneezing out a risk assessment in comparison with what that one was. So the advantage of this is, because it's outdoors, where we can rehearse outdoors, obviously that's massively helpful. But otherwise, it's been a case of keeping actors literally 2 meters apart, which under normal circumstances, that might be quite restrictive. But because the context is a socially distanced barbecue, it's kind of OK. And we're making it part of the comedy, or, you know, Nellif's doing a really good job of making that part of the comedy. So when we are in indoor spaces, it's just keeping them apart, making sure all those windows are open. We've got disinfectant for them. You know, they don't share their props, and they've got hand sanitizer, And, you know, before the, when they were all welcomed, I was like, welcome to the production. So happy to be working with you. Here is the list of COVID guidelines, you know. So it's just been a bit, it's just been a bit different. But I think, thankfully, because it's new writing, we have, we're lucky in that we have been able to make that kind of part of the scripted action rather than it seeming like a really odd thing that they're all standing apart and not. Anyway, I'll let Elif take over in terms of how, because she's been on the ground working with the actors and rehearsals.
Awesome.
So when I had the meeting with Rebecca about, you know, how to work safely with COVID guidelines, I already felt pretty clued in the sense that, you know, since lockdown, I've been wiping everything down. I've got loads of hand sanitizers at home. I've got my wet wipes, everything like that. So all I had to do before rehearsals was prepare, you know, when pregnant women go to hospital, they have like a hospital bag. Well, I had like a rehearsal bag with like cleaning products in it. So I had my, you know, wet wipes and the correct ones, because not the antibacterial ones, but you need the antibacteria and virus ones. So I ordered all of that online. And you've got to look out for a special number.
Yes.
On the back of each packaging to make sure it's the one that kills viruses and not bacteria only.
Oh,
so
right.
That was
yeah, I sent her a beautiful spreadsheet document about that. Like, these are the approved disinfectants. These ones won't work. This is what you need for hand sanitizer. Fascinating stuff, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. My God.
It kind of was. I was sat there going, oh, look at the differences. So I got all of that, and then I went and bought like 4 hand sanitizers for 4 of the actors. And because it's an outdoor dinner party barbecue, I had sort of all the right props that would work for an outdoor dinner party, like plastic cups, plates. And then with the sort of edible props like bread, and breadsticks and, you know, small finger foods, I just said to the actors, look, I will bring some props, but if you want to bring your own food that you want to snack on while you're rehearsing, bring it. It's not mandatory, but just be eating that one and don't be mixing with the other actors and stuff. I also have sort of color-coded glasses. So, you know, the pink glasses for this actor, the purple glasses for that actor, the orange glasses for this actor. So everybody knows which prop to handle. In terms of the actual rehearsals, because it's an outdoor performance, we started rehearsals on Monday in the scorching heat in Victoria Park in Bethnal Green.
Wow.
And that was very challenging. But I just wanted to get the actors, you know, outside projecting, getting used to having people listening and being outside and lots of noises and dogs barking. And that really happened from day one. We had people having picnics in the park watching us rehearse, which was quite interesting.
You charge them tickets?
No, but I was thinking I'd put my sun hat down and see if anyone's going to put some money in.
Yeah.
Might be a bit much. So, yeah, we, you know, I got them outside straight away. So in that sense, we were already socially distanced, and I had to explain to them that we have to keep our 2 meters where we can, not to speak to each other face to face. The way I like to direct is, whether it's an indoor show, an outdoor show, pre-COVID, post-COVID, is that I don't always like actors talking directly to each other because it becomes very closed in.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did with the crystal egg is, you know, you just make believe that if that person is next to you, the other actor, instead of talking directly to them or at them, you can come forwards and talk out to the audience, but you're still connected to that person. So you'll be in front talking out to the audience and then sometimes looking back to, you know, your scene partner. And I find that that approach works perfectly for the comedy that we're doing as well as for social distancing. So I've had no issues there. There were some things in the original script, as Rebecca mentioned, and we picked them apart a bit. And, you know, we were sort of saying, well, we can't really do that because of COVID. But then we've both found really imaginative ways of showing humour in a different way because of social distancing. And I don't want to say what that is because I want to come along.
Of course.
With it, obviously.
You can mention that we have removed a part where there was someone putting an item of food in someone else's mouth. And I read the new revised edition of that. I'm really sorry, Andrew, but absolutely no way.
Have they replaced? They've replaced the food with a swab, have they? So now they're just swabbing each other's mouths.
Swabbing each other from a distance.
what I will say, though, is there's a lot of hand gel involved.
Yes.
In the comedy, so yeah.
Which
I hope that answers your questions. I mean, we're following the guidelines. We're making it part of the comedy. We're making part of the script. And because we're outside, it's just, it feels and is a bit more safe.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'll be interested now that some of the theatre venues are being opened, how people will feel going into an indoor setting.
Yeah.
Will they have masks and all of that? Obviously here, in Lauderdale House, we're outside on the tea lawn. Some people might be wearing masks, but I'm sure most people won't be because we're outside. So it does feel safer. Mm. And the venue has marked out some lines on the grass to, sort of separate people into their own little bubbles and stuff like that.
Is there restrictions on how many you can have in an audience in terms of like...
Yeah, so it depends. Well, for them, it depends on space and whether you can give them enough space. So because they've drawn out these squares, you can have a household in a square. So I think 2 to 4.
Okay.
So depending on the people booked together or not, we could have, sometimes we might have a smaller audience because they've all booked in pairs, and sometimes we might have a bigger audience because they've booked as a house of 4. So but I think the capacity is around 80 on that lawn.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, so that's it's quite good. And they have been selling out other shows. So let's feel hopeful, shall we, that we might get that as well. Fingers crossed.
I mean, I'd love to get the numbers because I just would love for a lot of people to see theatre in a time when there isn't much theatre.
Mm.
So for me, what about let's have sell-out tickets? It'll be nice to have 20 people. It'll be nice to have 80 people. It doesn't really matter for me. But I would love to see people sort of back watching theatre, whether it's indoors or outdoors or on Zoom. I think it's really important for people's mental health. It's important for creativity. And that's why me and Rebecca are doing this. It's certainly not for the money.
No.
We are doing this out of love for theatre and collaboration and a group effort.
That's lovely to hear, because I know you say, we're not in this for the money, and I know that joke gets often passed around, but then there's still the craziness of the hustle and, the Edinburgh Fringe and the vaults, and it's like, well, then where are we going to go next? And we've got to have these reviewers in and this, that, and the other. When actually, yeah, what you're saying is we just want people to, laugh and have lift them out of that kind of, depressed bubble that we've all been in, which is really what it's all about. If anything, that's helped us maybe reconnect a bit more to why we do this in the first place and actually what we get out of it as well as what the audience do. So that's really, really refreshing for you to say, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, because, we know that some film productions and television and stuff are going ahead, but some of these things that are going ahead, there's a lot of money behind them and insurance and all sorts of things. We don't really have that with what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we really are doing it just for the creativity and just for the love of it, really. Yeah.
It feels like it could only happen with individuals taking a risk. Mm. Having it being part of some of the industry discussions around theatre, it's been all these problems around, can the venue afford the insurance or can we... Whereas, as you say, this just feels different. It feels like we just desperately wanted to make something again. And I'd recently had a conversation with, there'd been a young stage manager and various creatives that I'd mentored right at the start. And they just hearing that they'd lost all of their work and were doing an NHS job or being a delivery driver and just feeling that there's just a desperate need to do something so that people can work again, even if it's offering them, not a lot of money, but something to employ them. How important.
And I think one more question just before we sort of close things off is having now, you're going into doing this outdoor performance, is there scope for then that going to other outdoor venues, or has it is the thought just sort of do this one and then we'll see? Would you want to do more, for example?
Do you know what? I hadn't thought about it until 2 days ago in during one of the rehearsals outdoors, because we had so many people gravitating towards action. You know, that's what it was. I mean, clearly, either some people in the public were thinking, oh, there's someone here having an argument or whatever was happening in the scene, but they clearly had scripts in their hands too. So whatever was going on, people were fascinated. And so what happened, and you're under a pagoda in the park, and like lots of people just came, and you know, a couple of girls sat down, had a picnic, and then a large family came and watched, and some people walked around us, and it felt really nice, and it gave me the idea that, you know, it doesn't need to stop here. And my personal feeling, and this is really just my feeling, is that I don't think this virus situation is going to go away anytime soon. And until we have a vaccine that has been tried, tested, and all that other stuff, you know, we might be looking at a few years of restrictions. And if that means that we're going to have more outdoor performances, then definitely I think this is a way forwards. If another venue thinks, oh, this is a great troupe of actors and a director and a producer who are doing this, and they want to, you know, let us use their venue to do it in other venues and other places around England and the United Kingdom, then great. But at the moment, I just want to see how this goes, because it's already in and of itself quite a big task. Just to see how it's going to pan out and see how people are going to respond to it. But one thing I'm really sure about is that when people come and watch it, they're just going to have a nice picnic, come rain or shine, and they're just going to have a good time. And that's what it's all about. So if this is the last thing I do in this period, that's fine. If we take it to other venues, I should be so lucky. So yeah.
Awesome. Great. I think that's a great place to leave it, Elif and Rebecca. Thank you so much for joining us. The link to book tickets will be in the description for Polite Conversation. You can catch it 31st of August and then the 1st, 3rd, 7th, and 8th, and the 10th of September. Is that right? Hey,
Yes.
I wrote it down. But I couldn't say Lauderdale House right earlier at the beginning. So Lauderdale House, 7 p.m. Those are the dates. So yeah, please do check it out. If you haven't seen theatre in a while, like I haven't, go and get your theatre fix. And it sounds like a right laugh. Also, the food that's on the barbecue, is that up for grabs afterwards? Like, is there going to be like any chicken left over?
I'm still trying to figure out whether it's a barbecue or just like a little dinner party. So that's something I'm still trying to figure out. But if there are any kebabs
I was
and
going to
nobody's
say,
touched
when I smell a barbecue, that's it. I'm just
them,
salivating.
although to mention, you can buy pre-order a grazing box to munch through the performance. Just to clarify, you can buy your own picnic. So maybe that's the compromise or solution. That could be actually
Rebecca's thought of
happening.
everything here. She's that's top producer work right there. Got the snack sorted. Awesome. Well, thank you both giving up some time to talk to us about it. I really look forward to hearing more about what you've got coming up next. We won't leave it another 2.5 years before doing another interview. No.
Please don't.
Hopefully not. Here's hoping. And thank you so much for having us, Tom. We really appreciate it.
Oh,
Yeah.
my pleasure. My pleasure. Fantastic. Well, see you on the other side, guys. And yeah, be well. All the best with it. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the London Theatre Podcast. All previous episodes are available on Spotify, iTunes, and SoundCloud. You can go to our website, thelondontheatrepodcast.com, and you can email us, thelondontheatrepodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter at LTheatrePodcast, that's L for London. And yeah, share the podcast. Leave a review, why not? You can also find more information on the shows, artists, and topics discussed in the podcast description if you're looking for some handy links. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time. Take care.